All right, it is now time for our main speaker. Please welcome Ryan from Laguna Niguel.
My name's Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. This is my home group, so this is pretty cool to get to do this. I'm really excited about it. I was really, really nervous about it, and I haven't gotten that nervous to speak. I'll tell you. So the first time I spoke, I did 10 minutes at the Canyon Club for Topher, and that was like pretty like mind-boggling, and I hadn't felt that way till today. And this afternoon, I'm sitting around, and of course, I'm thinking about myself because I'm an alcoholic, and I'm like, it's my home group. I love this meeting. I've seen it grow over the past, you know, 2.5 years that I've been coming around here, and like, I had the speaker getter commitment, and like, I'll never live up to it. And like, self, 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 right? And I have this new sponsee, and he was like, can we meet up today? And in my head, I'm like, I don't want to do it right before the meeting because I just want like an hour to think about me before I have to speak. And then I was like, and then luckily, long story short, I was like, I came around to the right action, right? And I was like, just meet me before the meeting, 5:45. And I sit down with him. And I start to listen to him for a half an hour. And all of a sudden, all of that anxiety, all of that fear is gone. And what it tells me is like the prescription is the same no matter how long I'm here. One alcoholic talking to another. And the anxiety is gone. And I just wanted to lead with that. But how good was Byron? Let's give him another round of applause. Like at 4 months, there's no chance I could have done that. Like not a hope in hell. I had barely decided that I wanted to be sober at 4 months, let alone like came up to the podium. And then it's just like, you know, God works in mysterious ways. Like my sponsor takes a birthday on the night I'm speaking up here. And it's just really cool because this meeting just means the world to me. And I can't say that enough times tonight. And I'm probably going to say that like 10 more times. And it's because I've been around this program for 14 years before I came in this time. And I never felt the way I felt when I walked in the doors of this church. There was something different going on in this room that has kept me coming back almost every Sunday night, apart from when I've been away from the area. And I just absolutely adore this meeting, and I adore AA, and I love my sponsor, and I love my sponsees, and like what this thing has done for my life, I never ever thought it was possible. Like I said, being around these rooms for many years and not really understanding, not really getting the freedom that you know, I would always come in here and I'd hear people talk about stuff, you know, and they would say, "I've got the job, and I've got this, and I'm so happy, and now I'm getting married, and I'm having kids," and I'd be like, that sounds really good, but like, can I just not want to kill myself? You know, like that's what it came down to for me. And you know, I come from a home where religion was forced on me from a young age. We went to church multiple times a week. And, you know, I might as well just tell you guys this. My mom has never had an alcoholic beverage, ever. Like not one sip ever in her life. She's never had a sip of caffeine in her life. Like that's who raised me. I mean, you can put two and two together. They're probably pretty crazy if that's the case, but you know, that's who raised me. And what's crazy is like, they talk about this being a family disease and all me, my brother and my sister, we don't, I won't speak for them. Their stories are their stories. But at a minimum, they're like what is described as a hard drinker in our big book. Whether or not they're alcoholic is for them to find out. And but that's what happened. My dad's not a drinker. I've seen him have two beers in my entire life. One was when we were in Europe, and one was the year I turned 21 on Thanksgiving, and that's it. And I turned out to be an IV heroin user who ended up locking himself in a room with bottles of vodka, killing himself before I got in here this time. And how does that happen? I don't know how it happens. And today, I don't really care how it happens. All I know is I suffer from this thing called alcoholism. And what that means I suffer from is that I have this thing that happens is when I take a drink, all bets are off. And I, but the thing is as the years go on, I know what's going to happen. Like, it always ends up the same. Like, I end up ruining a relationship. I end up ruining my finances. I end up hurting someone. I end up in jail. I end up in rehab. But yet I do it again, thinking it will be different. And if you set me up and you put a lie detector test on me, I will pass. It's going to be different this time, because this time I'm in the Carpenters Union. I've got a good job, work for one of the best general contractors in all of America. I work in Manhattan. I'm a foreman on the Time Warner project here. It's a $900 million project. What are a few little pills going to do? Everything's under control. And I do it again. And then I look up and it's funny because we read They Stopped in Time at this meeting, and I love it because it's something different that we have here. I also love, like, our joke. It's my favorite part. Heather's done a great job. Let's give Heather a round of applause for being a great secretary. And we keep up these traditions. We've started these little traditions, and it's so fun. And I remember meeting Kelly when we got here, and the chip for every month. And he's like, if you're going out telling people to come, just tell them that they're going to chip every month. It'll keep people coming back. And we have all these little things that happen in this meeting that are, you know, and it's our meeting. And I just love that. But we read They Stopped in Time. And unfortunately, that's not my story. If I stopped in time, my ex-wife wouldn't have moved, like, across the Atlantic Ocean to get away from my alcoholism. I didn't get the memo that you could stop in time. I wish I did, you know, but my story is my story. And I'll jump around a bit. You know, they tell us to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. But I jump around a bit, and I learned that from my sponsor. So, like, if you have any problem with that, just blame Topher. That's the way he speaks, and that's the way I speak. When I came in this time, I remember. So my sobriety date is May 11th of 2022. So I'm up here with 2 years and 7 months. So I'm going to give you what I got for 2 years and 7 months. But what I'm also going to give you is somebody for 14 years that was in these rooms and didn't hear the message. Whether was it there? Yeah, probably. But I didn't hear it. I didn't hear what I got when I found men like Topher, men like Tim, men like Kelly. I did not hear the message. I was around. I was on the outskirts. Like Byron talked about, I wanted to be in with the cool crowd in the program. I got sober 12 years ago in LA, and I fluctuated around and came in and out and then put some time together. But this time, so it's March of 2022 and I get sober in May. And so it's a Sunday morning, right? And I'm physically addicted to alcohol at this point. I'm on a medical leave from work. So, you know, what do I do during a medical leave? I drink more. Like, I can get away with drinking. I'm on a mental health, you know, leave, whatever. I was in the union, so you can get away with these things. And where you'd find this alcoholic, is this is what it come down to. I'm sitting on a couch on a Sunday morning watching Stephen Furtick Elevation Church chugging vodka. Because I'm searching for something, right? Like, I'm searching for something. But I'm not willing to come in here and take the action because I know what I have to do here. I got to come in. I got to take the action. I got to be honest with another man. And I actually, if I'm going to do it this time, I've actually got to do it because I know deep down in my soul that I've been around it. I've put time together. I've said I've worked the steps thoroughly and honestly, but I know in my soul I never have. And I'm still looking for the easy way out. I'm watching this church service, drinking this vodka because anything other than coming back in here. And what happens for me is I proceed to start to get this panic because the alcohol is not working anymore. And I'm panic stricken. And I wake up with these panic attacks that will last for hours. And I'm chugging vodka and I'm taking handfuls of pills and it's not going away. And I walk down the stairs and I'm at my parents' house at this point and I'm shaking and I could barely move. And I go to the hospital. And they hooked me up with a little drip of, you know, benzos, whatever that stuff is. And all of a sudden I feel better. But the doctor comes in and he talks to me. He's, you know, Your symptoms really mirror somebody that's withdrawing from alcohol. And I'm like, dude, I might be like giving myself wet brain, but like I am not withdrawing from alcohol because I'm chugging alcohol. And he's like, okay, well, we want to do like, a little scan of your liver. And they do a scan of my liver and they, come in and they tell me your liver's enlarged. All I've heard this before in my life. And what happens is I walk right back out the hospital and I proceed to kill myself for 6 more months, waking up with that same feeling. Alcohol is no longer working. And I don't know what to do because, our book talks about it. We get to this place where it's like this spiritual way of life or go on to the bitter end. And sometimes it's a hard freaking choice. And it was a hard choice for me. And I go on drinking for 6 more weeks with it not working. The panic wouldn't stop. The anxiety wouldn't stop no matter how much I drank. And eventually I made the phone call to come out here and I got out here and and that started my journey this time. And the reason why I lead with that is because I know there's a lot of people here in treatment, and I feel so honored that we have some treatment vans that show up here. I love the fact that we have treatment vans that show up here because the truth of the matter is what Topher taught me when I got here is that you guys are what this whole thing is about. And he pointed it out in the book to me where it says like we started meeting so that newcomers had a place to bring their problems. And that's what I try to keep in mind. So I want to lead with this of what happened, for me this time, because I was in treatment, or an IOP, whatever, sitting in this room. And 2 years, 7 months later, I'm up here getting to tell my story and just try to help another person. And it's the greatest thing that's ever happened in my life. To back up a little bit, like I said, I was not a raised around alcohol. I didn't plan on being an alcoholic. Nobody really is in my family is an alcoholic. I learned later on that like way back, there's a ton of alcoholism. But it wasn't something that I plan on doing. And I don't feel the same way as a lot, a lot of people stand up here and they say, oh, I felt different and I felt out of place. That's not my story. What my story is that I was fearful. I was a really fearful kid. I had a lot of friends. I was an athlete. I got along with a lot of kids, but I was so scared. I was so scared all the time. And I tell this story most of the time when I talk because it's just a great example of it. This is long before I got a drink. We lived in Philadelphia, and my mom sometimes, this is, I was, I'm 36 years old. So the early 90s, she would, leave us in the car and run into 7-Eleven or the gas station or whatever. And I remember I would be crying when she would come back, just scared out of my mind as a little boy. And so you fast forward and I find alcohol and alcohol relieves that immediately. And the second I picked up weed and alcohol, I was like, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I don't identify with like a slow progression. For me, I knew when I tried that stuff, like this fixed me, and like I'm gonna do this forever. This fixes this fear, this fixes this anxiety, this allows me to be me, this allows me to be free. I'm gonna never stop. Why would I stop? And at the time, it's not like I wanted to do it around the clock, but what I mean is like I'm gonna use this stuff whenever I can get my hands on it. In these different situations to have fun, to whatever. I never planned on it going where it went, but I knew that it was like my medicine. And high school goes on. I'm a golfer. I love to golf. I'm a pretty good golfer. I go to college, and in college I was introduced to this stuff called OxyContin. And that changed my life. I heard a speaker recently who said, when we share from the podium, if we identify as alcoholic and our story includes drugs, we talk about it and then we move on. So that's what I'm going to do quickly is that OxyContin overtook my life. It was a better, quicker version of alcohol at the time for me. And I rode that out, but it doesn't last very long. And it turned into IV heroin use and it turned into me going to rehab at about 21 years old. And because when I found that stuff, nothing got in my way. and I was just going to go on to the bitter end. And I go off to rehab. I go off to rehab in my early 20s, and I come to LA, and I remember I had this therapist, and his name was Dr. Phil, not the Dr. Phil on TV, much better version of the Dr. Phil on TV. He was this cool surfer dude. He had like the hair, like long blonde hair, and he was like from California, you know, surfed in Big Sur, super cool. And the whole idea was, I told my parents, the only way I'll go see a therapist is if this therapist like was a heroin addict. Like, I'm not the only person I'll talk to. So anyway, they send me to see this guy, Dr. Phil. How they found someone he actually was. He had gotten sober by going through Betty Ford. He had about 17 years at the time. And I remember he told me this one thing that kind of has stuck out to me. You know, this is probably 15 to 17 years ago. He told me this, and he said, Ryan, you know, I could drop you anywhere in the world. You could not even speak the language, and you'll find what you're looking for in 20 minutes. And it was the first person that pulled the veil off my stuff, because I remember I was telling him, like, you know, giving him all the lines we get because nobody's going to come in the way of me and my medicine. And it pulled the veil on me a little bit, and I kind of knew, like, oh, crap, I can't talk this guy out of it. I'm not going to be able to convince this guy to tell my parents to leave me alone. And I find myself on a plane going to Betty Ford. And if you guys are anything like me, I plan on going to Betty Ford, but I don't plan on getting sober. I've just got to clean up some things and like get this life in order. So I get to Betty Ford, and of course, you know, I last there for 3 days. And because I'm not really emotionally stable when I get sober, I don't really know what's going on. I don't really want to be stable. And I want as much meds as possible. So my behavior is like pretty mirroring like an insane person. And they called my dad, and they were like, hey, sir, like, you need to come get your son, because if not, we're like going to 5150 him. So like, your choice is to get on a plane and come get him. And like, my poor dad, who had just lost his other son in a drunk driving accident 6 months before. My little brother passed away 6 months before, has to fly to California to pick me up and drop me off at Riverside Behavioral Health. And that was my first mental institution that I went into. And I went in there, and they found me another treatment center, and I floundered. I'm not going to go into it, but I floundered. And if you're in treatment and you floundered, it's okay. I floundered from 21 to 33. I would say what I needed to say when I went into treatment with my family so that everyone would stay off my back. I never looked in the mirror. I never thought about how selfish I was. I never thought about how my actions affected my parents, then later on my kids, then later on my wife. And I floundered, and I would do whatever is necessary, because nothing is going to come in between the drink and the drug. Nothing. I will do anything in my power to keep drinking and using. I'll tell you a little story. Last night I had the honor of going to Bakersfield. It's a wonderful town. I really like it, actually. It's the third time I've been there in 4 months. But I went up there to hear my sponsor speak, and last night I would have done anything to get out of his car. You know, he bought an electric vehicle, and these things, in case you're wondering, I thought they were great. I was like, these electric vehicles are wonderful. Not when they have a 200-mile range. And but here's the deal, guys. I had the privilege to go up there, and I had the privilege to charge his car twice, once on the way there and once on the way home. Like, what's better than that? And but it kind of reminded me of what it reminds me of is, and I'm going to tie it back into to what I was talking about by saying this, is like, anything that's inconvenient for me, like when I'm in self, like I'm in a car with my sponsor, my sponsee, my sponsor's childhood friend who's sober as well in this program. We're going up for them to speak at an AA meeting, and I'm like, this is not fitting into my schedule. You know, and it happened so quick, and it had happened again today with like not, you know, with wanting to think about myself before I came up here. And I heard this other thing lately where it was like, it's very important when I come up here and speak to remember when I get the honor and the privilege to speak, and I have a few times, is like, I always try to ask myself, like, how far will I go to listen? Because I'll go real far to hear myself talk. Really far. And I got the privilege to go like really far to listen last night. And it was, you know, really, really fun. And it was a great time. And apart from the charging of the car, it was really, really enjoyable. But my ego builds up so quickly. And this whole entire program to me is about ego deflation. It's about bringing me back down into right size. I heard a speaker. I was blessed with the privilege to go out to the Las Vegas Roundup at Thanksgiving, and I heard a speaker say something, and he said he got it from Chuck Z. But it really made sense to me. And he said this. He said, "What we're trying to do here is rid ourselves of self. And I don't care what you believe in. I don't care like what you think about your higher power. As long as you're willing to believe this little bit." As long as you're ridding yourself of self, God has room to come in, and it doesn't fucking matter what you believe in. And it was like mind-boggling to me. Because what's happened for me is when I look back on those years of floundering, it was all about self. And the amount of damage that I did in those years, 9 treatment centers, jails, institutions. And luckily, I never got in too much trouble. So I'm not going to stand up here like I'm a hardened criminal. I did a couple overnights. That's about it. Like, you know, I didn't have anything happen that bad to me. But I had the, you know, privilege of feeling that steel, you know, that cold heart. It's not fun. But I'm not some hardened criminal. But I did do a lot of psych wards. I'm pretty much a professional at that. My last one was New York Presbyterian in Manhattan. I got like they came and got me off my job site. Story for another day. Those years of floundering, that's really what I want to talk about tonight, because if you're new and you're floundering, there is a solution here. There is something that's being offered here. And what's being offered here is that your obsession to drink and use can be absolutely lifted, and it can happen like this. And that's what happened in my life. It can also happen slowly. And if your experience differs from mine, like take mine with a grain of salt, but this is just my experience. My experience is this time around, what we can offer you is that it is possible for that obsession to drink and use to be lifted like this. The problem is that I still suffer from alcoholism. And if it's not followed up by action, and it's not followed up by working steps 4 through 9, and then working steps 4 through 9 over again by working 10, 11, and 12, I can bring a whole lot of pain back into my life, and my character defects can crop up again. And I've had a heck of a week with that. I was humbled by my character defects just about 10 days ago, and I had to get honest, and I had to tell the truth to my sponsor, and I had to tell the truth to my girlfriend about some money things, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'm not going to go into it like too deeply, but I was in fear once again, and I made some decisions based on self that placed me in a position to be hurt, but also more importantly, and like this is the thing I think about, like it placed me in a position to hurt people that I really love. And but the prescription stays the same. Like I get honest, I ask how I can make it right. I took those actions the last few days, and I'm on the right path again. But the truth of the matter is the obsession to drink and use has been gone for me from 45 days sober. So I got here May 11th of 2022. I came to treatment down in San Clemente. I went to treatment. I had no interest in being sober physically. I just didn't want to deal with like the feeling of like my liver and everything that I was dealing with. So my last couple of days of drinking went like this. I would, you know, need at least a handle of vodka a day. I would have to during the night, I would set up one of those protein shakers with about this much vodka in it. I'd have to drink that down during the night, fill it up again in the morning, usually puke up my first drink so that I could get down my second and my third so that I could get out of my room so that I could start my day and do something. Eventually that got miserable and my choice was either go to treatment, kill myself, or that was really what I was at that point. Like coming back to AA was not on my radar. But I came to treatment and I was blessed enough to still have a little bit of time on insurance because I had been on medical leave for a while. And I got into treatment and I started doing the same thing that I always do. I floundered. I'm the best client in treatment because I want everyone to like me. I have a huge ego. So I tell everyone, you need a sponsor. You should stay in sober living for a year. Like, it's really a good thing. I've worked in treatment before. You, listen to me. Trust me, man. Get a sponsor, work the steps, stay in sober living for a year. Get well job, you know, get well job. You know, don't want too much stress. And I tell everyone, but the truth is I'm just a fraud. I'm just a fraud once again. And what happened is at 45 days sober, I had two kids that during those years of floundering that I had brought into this world, I had gotten married. Those kids and that wife had left me and moved to Italy because my disease was that bad that she didn't want to just divorce me and stay in the States. She was an Italian citizen. She was like, I'm going home. And at 45 days sober, see, I went to treatment in May. And the truth of it was, is that I know I was going to visit. My kids were coming to America from July 1st to like July 30th. So if I get sober, treatment, get out, last week of June, boom, see my kids, go back to work, we're all good. Truth is that my parents ratted me out, and they told my ex-wife, and I got a phone call, and it went like this. It said, you've been to treatment before, I don't care, you're not seeing your kids, they're not coming. And what happened for me that day is I had a spiritual experience. I had something happen because God did for me what I couldn't do for myself because something shifted in my brain and it hasn't changed since. And since that day, I have not had a craving for alcohol or drugs. I've not had an obsession to drink and use. It was lifted for me from that moment. And what happened for me that day is I had this choice that I've had millions of times in my life or hundreds of times in my life, which is, am I going to blame everything on everyone around me or am I going to take responsibility and look inside? And I don't know why that happened because none of my actions in the 44 days prior would have given anyone who could have seen in me any idea that I was that's the way I would go with it. And the way I went with it was that I had this overwhelming feeling like, you're just a fraud. You're going to keep coming in and out of your kids' lives forever. And you're just going to be a fraud forever. And eventually, everyone out here in California is going to find out about you like everyone back east already knows. And what happened was, is I had this spiritual experience. The problem with the spiritual experience is I've had hundreds of them without followed up with action, they're useless. They're useless. And what happened for me was that I had surrounded myself with a couple good people, one of them who happens to be my wonderful girlfriend now, and she took me to a meeting. And yes, if you're wondering, we were dating in treatment. We're still dating. There's no rule in the book that says that that's a bad idea. Although usually it is. And she took me to a meeting and she took me to the meeting with the intention of setting me up with Tim to be my sponsor. So hello, Tim, if you're on Zoom, there's your shout out, sir. What happened was, is I saw this man, Topher, and he had his year old daughter with him. And it's a Tuesday meeting that we have at the Canyon Club in the small room. It's called Disapproved Literature. And we had a barbecue every week at that time before the meeting, and he had his little girl with him, and I saw him, and I was like, that guy looks kind of cool, although I don't really know about like the pink and teal shirt and like the chest tattoo. I don't know about all that. What's going on there? I'm not sure, but he seems all right. He seems kind of cool. He liked basketball. I liked basketball. We talked a little bit about basketball. I thought in my head I should really ask him to sponsor me. But then I was like, oh, Ryan, you're overreacting to this situation, guys. Take it easy. And what happened for me is God did for me what I couldn't do for myself, because he walked up to me after the meeting with a little prodding, I think, from somebody named Christy. And he said to me, hey, man, you want to work some steps? And if he wouldn't have asked me that, I wouldn't have asked him. I could tell you guys that. Because I don't know. I couldn't do it. I know I wouldn't have done it that night. Maybe I would have done it in the future. And good thing I never have to find out what would happen. But I know I wouldn't have asked him that night. And I know that the way I look at that now is that, like, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself, because God works through people in my life. And he worked through him. He worked through Christy that night. And what happened was is he lived – at this point, I was still in treatment. When I got out of treatment, I ended up living about a mile from his house, and I would go sit in his garage. And we believe in our sponsorship family to work steps quickly and thoroughly. Doesn't mean we skip things, but quickly. It's about triage, guys. Like when you come in here, we want to get you some relief. That's what he told me. I want to get you some relief. My job is to take you through the steps so that you can find God, because I'm a fallible man and I will let you down. And what happened is that made sense to me. And I saw what had happened in his life. He was the same age as me. And I said, this guy was coming up on 10 years at the time he was. And I was like, man, he's got a little girl. He's got a wife. He's got a place to live. He's got a good job. He's relatively happy. No, seriously, like that's all I want at this point in my life. If you're anything like me, if you're the real alcoholic, like, all I want is a little peace and freedom. Like, I don't need much. I mean, at this point, I just don't want to, like, wake up and have the choice of either go on to the bitter end drinking and using to die or kill myself. Like, that had gotten to the point where it no longer worked, number one. And number two, like, there was no good option left. And we worked the steps quickly and thoroughly. And I'll tell you guys this, a little bit about the four step. I did the four step, and what had happened for me is I had had this experience with God that when I wrote the four step, telling him was nothing, because it was like this thing happened when I wrote it, where it was like for the first time, like I had this honest connection with God where it was like, I don't really care what he thinks about me, because I felt like, it's not like God didn't know, but like I felt like for so many years I compartmentalized that, like, it was like more important to me to be honest with myself and God on that piece of paper than it was with him. So like telling him everything wasn't a big deal for me. I did it. You know, we talked about my character defects. We have a little thing that we do with 6 and 7. Byron's doing it right now that I think is pretty cool. Where we look at we read The Greatest Thing in the World, and we look at these 9 elements of love and how that we can replace our character defects with these 9 elements of love, because the truth is the book talks about it, but they say we pray to have them removed. And for us, like, it really worked for me to like look at these actions, look at these things that I can replace these character defects with, that I can strive to be better in. And if you're interested about that, please come talk to me after the meeting. But we did that, but what Tim and Topher preached to me is service, 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 and out of self, out of self, out of self, out of self. And if you're in treatment, you can start that today. There's nothing in this program that says you start being of service when you start sponsoring. That was a mistake I made many years in this program. I never got any relief because I never was out of self at all. I come in here, I get a sponsor, I start working the steps, but I do no service. And I'm not out of self at all. And I wonder why I don't feel better. And to me, like, the relief comes in talking to someone else and hearing about their problems. So I started in sober living, going up to guys and just listening to them. And all of a sudden I started to feel a little bit better, and I started to think about my kids a little bit less. And I started to have this freedom that just a hair of it, just a little tiny peak of it. Then I started to get a commitment at a meeting or two. Then I started to get involved at service at the Canyon Club. And all these things gave me a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And what it did was it got me through while I worked the steps to what this thing is really all about. Because what Topher told me is, I'm going to take you through the steps so that hopefully you can find a relationship with God. And then your job is to go do that for someone else. And when I keep life that simple, it's gone pretty well the last 2.5 years. And I have the pleasure of having two guys in the room tonight. And it's such an honor, because I remember the first time, like, I went with Tim and Topher to go speak, and they acknowledged me sitting there, and that just meant the world to me. But I also thought, like, I'll never get there, and I was confused, and I was like, I don't know. But what I did is I just followed these two men. I just followed them, and I did what they did, and I started to get relief, and I started to have these things happen. And what I can tell you guys is that when I got sober, if you would have told me that I would have to wait 2 years to see my kids, I would have said, there's no point. Give me the gun now. But I did wait 2 years, and I got the pleasure of seeing them this July, and it was the greatest time of my life. And I was there, and I was present, and I was myself. And for the first time probably in my kid's life, they got to find out who their daddy is. And I'm so blessed that they have a mom that you know, my big fear going into it was that, like, they're not going to know that I'm dad. They're not going to think that I'm dad anymore because she has a boyfriend that lives in the house and blah, 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 blah. And the truth is, like, when I pulled up, like, they came up and gave me a hug. It was weird for 30 seconds. And it was over, and all the fear just went out. Once again, I tell myself, self, self, self. Fear is always, always brought on by selfish and self-centered thinking. Always thinking about, like, my ex-wife and her boyfriend and how, like, come on, Ryan. You know what I mean? Like, how lucky are they that they have a guy that lives in the house that's leading their house? How lucky am I that they have a mom that's not an alcoholic? Like, but I'm thinking about how it all affects me. Selfish, self-centered, the root of our troubles, they say. And I'll wrap it up with this. This is out of the As Bill Sees It. And our chief responsibility to the newcomer is an adequate presentation of the program. If he does nothing or argues, we do nothing but maintain our own sobriety. If he starts to move ahead, even a little, with an open mind, we break our necks to help in every way we can. And I just feel so, so blessed that I'm surrounded, that this is my home group, because that's what we do here. There's many of us here that do this. And like I said, guys like Kelly and Tim and Topher leading the way, and women in here as well. That's what we do at this meeting. That's what I found here. And it says we break our necks if they even try a little. And I never thought that would, like, that's what this was about, guys, but that's what it's about. And it can start today for you guys. It can start today. It doesn't matter how much time you have. It doesn't matter anything that's going on in your life. Out of self, out of self, out of self, out of self, out of self. It's the recipe every time, at least for this alcoholic. And I'll end with this is many times I sat in these rooms and I hear these people and I'm like, you know, they talk about, you know, I was in debt and I was in this and I got out of it and I got this big bonus at work or I hit the lottery, you know, and I say to myself, like, man, it would be nice to have a cash god. Or they say I got married, I had kids, all these things worked out. I had legal troubles. They just disappeared. You know, I went into court and they found out I was an AA and they just dismissed my charges. That's not my story, guys. That's not my story. But when I think like that, I'm in self. Because what I've gotten here and what you guys have given me here, especially in this room, the freedom that I have today, the freedom from the bondage of self, the freedom from being a slave to drugs and alcohol, like, you couldn't put a price tag on that. I'm a free man today. And I never thought I would be that way. I never thought when I came in here that I would be in debt still, that I would see my kids once in 2.5 years, that I would, you know, I waited 2 years to get a vehicle, that I would be making a lot less money than I made when I got sober. All these things, but the freedom I have today is, there is not a price tag you can put on it. And all you have to do is have a little bit of willingness, walk up to someone, put out your hand, say, can you be my sponsor? And if they take you through those 12 steps, I am telling you, if you do them thoroughly, you will find God and you will be free like me. I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.